Westchester Talk Radio is broadcasting live.
News, trends, and more.
No one knows Westchester County better than we do.
We are Westchester Talk Radio.
Good day and welcome to Rockland Talk Radio. I'm John Marino and we are produced by Sharka Creative, made possible by Robeson Oil, the house that service built by Lipolis Electric. Don't be left in the dark. Get Lipolis by Hightower Westchester. Managing your wealth through a fiduciary standard by White Plains Hospital, Michael Labriola, Landscape Design and Construction of Armonk, and by Tompkins Mayor Pack Bank. Here on the Cup of Joe Political Show, we are joined by State Senator Elijah Reichlin-Melnick. Elijah Reichlin-Melnick represents the 38th District, which covers a good portion of Rockland County, the towns of Clarkstown, Ramapo, and Orangetown, and also a piece of Westchester along the Hudson River, a little piece of Ossining, also part of the district. It is a district that was represented previously by David Carlucci. David Carlucci ran unsuccessfully last year for the congressional seat, the Democratic nomination for the congressional seat, held for decades by the now retired legendary Nita Lowey, and now held by Mondaire Jones, freshman congressman. Elijah Reichlin-Melnick, your first term in office in the state Senate. Tell us, what was it like being a freshman state senator during the just concluded session?
So it was a wonderful experience, and I really feel honored to have this privilege of representing all the people in the 38th District, as you said, on both sides of the river. This was an unusual session because we began it in the midst of the biggest wave yet of COVID. Things were shut down. People were the number one issue we could deal with was, how do we keep people safe from COVID? How do we get vaccines out into the community so that people could start to get back to a normal life? How do we get relief out for businesses, for renters, for landlords, for so many people? And then also we had the secondary issue of, what do we do with a governor that seemed to have a new accusation against him just about every day from some woman or person who he'd allegedly abused or harassed in some way. So it was a kind of a wild time to come into office, certainly far from normal, but also the most important moment, because, you know, we are poised now, I think, for a real economic recovery, hopefully, but we've got to just make sure we finish getting all these vaccines out and you know, help businesses that just barely hung on by the skin of their teeth get back on their feet now.
What were the key issues that you moved forward? What pieces of legislation did you sponsor that are now law, or maybe with some extra push next time around will become law?
That's a great question. So there's a couple, I would say the two bills that I am most proud of sponsoring that have passed both houses and now await the governor's signature, a bill locally for the East Ramapo School District. This is a district which a lot of your listeners may know has been a very troubled district for a long time. It's the lowest graduation rates in Rockland County. There's been major conflict between the public school students and the board, which is controlled by members who send their kids to private schools. The district has had financial problems. They've lost a federal civil rights lawsuit. And we passed legislation that is going to give the state monitors who oversee this district the power actually to overrule decisions of the school board if those decisions are not being made in keeping with state rules and regulations and are not following the academic and fiscal improvement plan for the district. This gives public school families the comfort and the knowledge that the state is looking out for them and is going to make sure their kids are getting the kind of education that they need. This has been delivered to the governor. I really urge him to sign it. This is a top priority for the statewide NAACP, for the New York Civil Liberties Union, who recognize the violation of these children's rights that's occurred. So that was one of the things I was extremely proud we passed. Another one is a little bit technical, but it reflects and relates to something called early intervention services. And these are services that parents of young children under 3 years old often need if their kids are having developmental delays, not learning to speak or move or you know, basic sort of behavioral things. If they're not learning them at the right pace, a lot of times that's a sign of a developmental delay, and we need people to be able to get treatment services for their kids. The way those are funded currently, everybody goes to the insurance companies. The insurance companies deny about 85% of the claims. It delays the payments to providers. It delays the treatment for kids. And we leave the state and counties to pick up the cost. We passed a bill through both houses that is going to have the insurance companies directly funding the cost of these services and get that burden off of counties and get that so that parents can get the treatment they need for their kids sooner and providers can get paid sooner. It's a major win. It was 20 years in the making in the Assembly, and I'm really happy I was able to help get that over the finish line in the Senate.
Why so many problems for so long with East Ramapo schools? This has gone on a long time.
Well, I think it's this conflict because the majority of people using the public school system are a minority of the overall district. And East Ramapo right now has almost 9,000 public school students. It's the biggest school district in the county, but there are over 30,000 private school students. And so it's a district that's unique in New York State where a majority of voters don't use the public schools. And so understandably, these voters have been very concerned that they pay a lot in property taxes, which they do, and they're not getting anything in services from the public school system. And so there's been budgets that have been voted down. There have been allegations that the district is not accounting for where money goes. And, you know, the public school families, especially in light of this lawsuit, which was won against the district, that found the district had violated the Federal Civil Rights Voting Rights Act and committed civil rights violations against these public school communities that are overwhelmingly Black or Hispanic, that is the source, I think, of a lot of this distrust and allegations over the years and, you know, schools being sold by prior boards to private schools at below market rate, allegations from the state controller and things like that. There is a deep distrust between both sides of the community. And my hope is that this bill starts to give the public school community the confidence that the state is looking out for the interests of the public school kids. I started my career as a public school teacher, not in East Ramapo, but in a district with demographics very similar, with a lot of low-income kids, a lot of immigrant families. And we know that every kid deserves to get an excellent education wherever they go to school.
You pointed out that a number of people on the school board in East Ramapo send their kids to private school. Is that fair that they get to make the rules for the kids who go to public school too?
I mean, I don't know if it's not a question of fairness. It's unusual. I'll put it that way. Everybody's entitled to vote for who they want for school board. So I don't, you know, the reality is the people that use private schools are taxpayers just like everybody else. And in many cases, you know, they're paying taxes for a service they don't really use. But the impact is not fair. That, I think, is what it's about. I don't want to set this up as a fight between the private and the public school community because I represent all communities. That's my role as an elected official. But what is not fair is the public school kids who are not getting an excellent education. And really, although there have been heroic efforts by administrators and teachers to continue providing as best as they can, there's a reason that school districts try to be well-funded, and the district has been starved for funds. There have been kids who have been trying to, you know, graduate, and then they get class schedules that are mostly study halls or lunch periods because there aren't enough classes to go around. The district has cut back on extracurricular activities. They don't have student counselors. Even in COVID, when people have had such a mental health crisis for students, they don't have. Last year, there were thousands of kids that went months without having access to remote learning in the middle of this pandemic, when that's absolutely what they needed. They did not have the Chromebooks they needed, and the district wasn't following up. And so that, to me, is what really is not fair. Whoever is on the board, whether they send their kids to public school or private school, needs to be looking out for these children and making sure they get the education they deserve.
How do we make sure that happens? How do we make sure every kid has what they need to succeed?
So I think that the bill that we passed will go a long way towards making that happen. So for the last 5 years, the district has had state monitors there overseeing it, but those monitors have no real power. They have no authority. They can say to the district, we don't think you should do that, or are you following up with this? But the district has not had to listen to them because there is no consequence for disagreeing with what the monitor says. The bill that we passed gives the monitors teeth. it actually allows them, if they see actions going on in the district that don't pass muster, if they see the district failing to act in a way that's going to disadvantage the kids in the public schools, they can step in and they can either overrule something the district is doing, or they can actually require the district to take action if it's needed to correct those inequities. So to me, that is a major step forward, really a milestone for the district, for the public school kids and families there. And that's why I'm hoping the governor will sign it. This bill passed overwhelmingly in both houses of the legislature. It was a bipartisan vote. And this is an issue that really should bring people together to recognize we've got to do something for these kids.
I'm going to put you on the spot. Did you bring home enough bacon for the residents of the 38th?
I believe that we did, actually, yes. In this budget that just passed, we brought home record amounts of funding for schools, for instance, around the state. It was statewide about $1.37 billion in new foundation aid payments to schools. And this is the basic state aid formula to schools. We increased it in the legislature by the most it has ever been increased by. And so districts saw, for instance, Nanuet School District saw an over 50% increase in state aid. East Ramapo saw about a 20% increase in state aid. Ossining, which I represent in the Westchester side, they have been so disadvantaged getting less than half of what they're owed in the state aid formula, they got a huge increase as well. And so what you saw, not only does this help kids and teachers and schools, taxpayers are seeing a benefit too, because districts that got this big boost in aid didn't raise property taxes this year mostly, or they raised them by 0.1 or 0.2%, some extremely low number. But East Ramapo was a 0% increase in taxes this year. Nyack was a 0% increase in school taxes. Nanuet, 0%. I think South Orangetown was 0.1, and North Rockland was, which I don't represent, but it's in our county, 0% increase. That is the effort that comes from getting money to districts and having the state pick up a reasonable cost. And then just to add on the infrastructure side as well, we saw a 30% increase in state funding for villages and towns and cities around New York for the local road programs that they get money from the state. And so that will mean millions of dollars in additional funds coming to districts, to towns and villages in Rockland and the 38th Senate District, which of course then helps take the burden off local taxpayers.
Does infrastructure sometimes take a backseat to other issues?
I don't think it does in the state level. I think it is a critical issue because we all drive around and the roads have potholes. After the winter we just had, maybe worse than ever before. And if we don't act on infrastructure, the question with this is the thing with whether it's roads or bridges or water and sewer and things that are underground that you don't see.
And now broadband too.
And broadband, absolutely, absolutely. And I got colleagues upstate who they have half their district, not quite, but huge numbers of their constituents that simply don't have access to broadband at any price. These rural areas and the mountains and the farms. But the question with infrastructure is not do you pay for it or do you not pay for it? It's do you pay something now or more later? Because if you don't pay for infrastructure now, the cost to fix it balloons. It just explodes over the years because of that deferred maintenance. And I think that's what you're seeing. You look at New York City and the amount of backlog they have in maintenance on the subway system, for instance, is just unimaginable. And if they had actually maintained and paid over the years, it might not be so bad. And now they're looking at just billions of dollars, billions upon billions, to build these new tunnels under the river, to fix up the subways. And here in our district, it's the scale is less because we're not a size of New York City, but the need is there. And a lot of it is not the things that you see. We see the potholes. We don't see the water pipes that break. We see them when they break, but we don't see them when they're decaying. We see the sewer infrastructure when it breaks. We don't see it when it's just there. And if local governments don't have the resources needed to undertake these maintenance projects before they become a crisis, then we all are going to be paying more later. Mm-hmm. Honestly, it's like you want to go to the doctor before you have to go to the emergency room. And that's the same thing for infrastructure.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to infrastructure, I guess every community has their own gateway access project that they have to build and handle and maintain in order for everything to work. Every community, I think, has their own equivalent of the gateway access that we need from New Jersey to New York and back and forth, vice versa.
They do. So when I was on, before I was elected to the Senate, I was on the Nyack Village Board of Trustees for several years. And that's a good example because Nyack is in the middle of, and it was one of the things that I voted to approve, a $10 million modernization of the water system. Nyack's one of two villages in Rockland that don't use Suez United Water. They have their own municipal water company, Suffern's the other. And so the pipes are old. You know, in a lot of cases, they're 50, 70, 80-year-old pipes, and they break. And so the village is undergoing right now a $10 million multi-year replacement of water mains. And this is the sort of project that villages need to undertake, towns need to undertake. A lot of towns in our area, Orange Town, for instance, has a sewer plant that they have to constantly do maintenance on. And that's especially if, and they did Orange Town a few years ago, some major upgrades to sewer infrastructure as well. And again, you can't emphasize it enough. You got to do it before it becomes a crisis, or else it's more expensive and people are left with, you know, literally, you know, you know what hits the fan in that case if you don't fix the sewer system. So.
Yeah, I hear that. I have a good friend who works on the pipes and on the systems on the Westchester side of the river.
Yep.
And he tells me what he comes across and how old much of it is. And I wonder, how do we exist all these years later, hearing about all this stuff that happens to be 80, 90, 100, 115 years old. So like you said, the sooner the better, otherwise it costs a lot more.
And that's why, just to add on that, the federal government right now is debating this major infrastructure bill, which I really hope they'll get through, because there is an enormous amount of need and money is tight. And New York State, unlike the federal government, does have to balance our budget. So there is a limit to the amount of support the state and municipal governments too have to budget, they have to balance their budget. So there's a limited amount of support ultimately that we can give. The federal government is able to make those long-term investments because they don't on an annual basis have to balance, and frankly, they can print money. So I think they are, and interest rates are very low right now. And so this is a great time. If you're floating bonds, if you're you know, selling treasury notes and things like that at the national level, the interest rate is close to zero. You know, New York, U.S. You know, U.S. investment, people all over the world want to invest in U.S. treasuries. And so to me, this is an excellent time at the national level to be making a major investment in the long term, just like we did 75 years ago or 65 years ago with the highway system. And you know, as we've done over the course of our history, you spend money and it generates tremendous economic investment down the line.
Rockland Talk Radio, I'm John Marino, and we are produced by Sharka Creative, joined by 38th State Senate Representative Elijah Reichland Melnick. He represents a good portion of Rockland County, the towns of Orangetown, Ramapo, and Clarkstown, and a portion of Ossining in Westchester County. Senator Reichland Melnick, let's talk recovery from the pandemic now. Reopening, have we gone too far, too fast? Have we not gone far enough, or are we at a spot right now that seems to be just right?
So right now, I think we're actually in a pretty good place. But I say that with two things that we need to know, is we're in a good place as long as people keep getting vaccinated. If you're vaccinated now, every bit of science I've seen suggests you're pretty safe. The vaccines are incredibly effective at preventing people from getting the disease, and even more effective at preventing people from getting seriously sick or ending up in the hospital or even dying. You know, so I've been vaccinated since sometime in April. I think my full vaccination date was sometime in mid-April.
Me too.
And I feel comfortable. I've been out. I've been outside. I've been inside. At this point, it took a little getting used to after a year of avoiding these places. And
right
now, you see people without the masks. It there's a piece of me that still goes, "Oh my God, is this really, you know, safe?" But it is. If you're vaccinated, where I worry is there are still people in our community that haven't gotten the vaccine. Some because they're skeptical. Some because they don't know how to get access. Some because they've got real questions about it. And that does pose a risk, if not to us who are vaccinated, to the many people that aren't, and to some people that can't get vaccinated because they've got immune compromised conditions. And we see there's this Delta variant that's been spreading around the world. It's more contagious. It's has a higher incidence of making people sick. You look at what happened in India, where they had just hundreds of thousands or maybe over a million people who have died from this.
Right.
And it's, that is a risk. If we don't finish our progress, U.S. is now, we're not number one in the world, but we're close for the most vaccinated population. And that's a tremendous, I think, credit to the administration at the national level that has made this a priority in getting vaccines out and really running this as efficiently as possible to make sure the supply is there. But it's up to us as citizens, as Americans, as New Yorkers to take advantage of that. So if we do, I think it's good. Right now, the COVID rates are very low. The state has recorded very few deaths, very few new cases over the last several weeks. I think we'll keep that up over the summer. My concern would be these variants, if we don't take precautions, if we don't get people fully vaccinated before the fall and winter, the last thing I think any of us want to see is for this disease to come back and for us to have to go through another round of restrictions and, you know, shutting things down. But for now, I think, especially if you're vaccinated, people can feel pretty comfortable that it is safe to be out and about spending money in businesses and, you know, trying to resume that normal life that we had disrupted 15 months ago.
How do we get those who are not vaccinated? And maybe we could put it in these terms, not like we're trying to force anybody because you can't, but how do we get those who have not complied yet to get with the program?
I think we got to think about what everybody's got a different reason who hasn't been vaccinated, right? I mean, so some people that haven't been vaccinated haven't been because they still aren't clear where they can go, how they can get it. Maybe they don't have access to a car. Maybe they don't speak English well as a first language, so they're not understanding some of the requirements around it or where they can go. Then there are people that were waiting to see how the vaccines played out. And I think it's really important for those folks to understand we now have, forget doing, you know, tests with, you know, a few clinical samples and trials and things like that. We have a real world trial with well more than half of Americans who've received this vaccine. And the instance of serious side effects is almost zero. You know, it's 150 million people at least who have gotten it. So it's not literally zero, but there's probably less than 100 people out of 150 who have had any kind of a serious side effect. 150 million, that is. So I think that the evidence is increasingly clear and people should be aware of this. It is a safe vaccine. I mean, nothing in life is literally 100%, but this is as close as you're going to get in the real world. And in the time that the vaccines have been out, maybe 100 people or less have had any kind of a serious side effect, but thousands, tens of thousands of Americans have died of COVID over the last 6 months. And so if you're weighing what is my risk, even if you're a young person, because there are young people, even if you don't die, you could get sick, you could get long-term, we don't know what the long-term impacts of this are. You know, there are people in their 20s who have gotten COVID, they've lost their sense of taste and smell, and they didn't die, they didn't, you know, have to go on oxygen, but they still haven't gotten their sense of taste and smell back, and we don't know when or if they will. And I certainly enjoy smelling and tasting things, and I think most of us do. I wouldn't want to risk that. Even if that's not a deadly consequence, think of the loss of quality of life. There's been studies showing that people have recovered from COVID and their brain function is not what it was. And we don't understand fully the long-term impacts of this disease. And so to me, whatever incredibly small risk there is from the vaccine is so far outweighed by the harm that you could prevent by getting vaccinated to yourself, to your community, to people. And let's be clear, although the vaccines are incredibly effective for some of the oldest members of our community, there are cases where if you're 95 years old, your immune system is not great. Even if you've been vaccinated, you still could get COVID. And that really is why we need this protection as a community. And I think I encourage people to think of themselves and to think of the people that they love and their friends and their community members and try to do the right thing.
I'm going to add to what you said. Seconds before we began our show, I received an email from a friend who had COVID. And that friend said she's not going to go get a vaccine when she's eligible, when she gets medical clearance, I guess about 3 months down the road, because as of right now, even though she's A-okay, supposedly, she keeps getting reverberations from her COVID experience, including a rash that keeps coming and going and feeling like things aren't right. So you have both sides of the coin there.
Right.
That's
right.
Somebody I'm trying to convince that once you get the A-okay to get that vaccine, go get it.
I think that's a good idea. And you're right, though. That is one other group of people that may not be getting it right away if they just had COVID. Of course, it is true. You're not going to, if you got COVID in February, you're not going to be able to spread it or catch it again in April or May, for instance, as far as we know. But in the long run, the vaccines, as the virus keeps mutating, we have these new variants. The vaccines that have been out in the market so far are still very effective, even against the variants. And it would be important to try to protect yourself. Everything that we see says that a vaccine is going to help you, even if the virus keeps mutating. Maybe it doesn't stop you from catching it. But again, the goal is to stop people from getting sick and dying. People catch the flu virus every year. People catch colds every year. COVID is not like the flu and the cold because it kills a lot more people. But if we can get it to the point where you catch it, it sucks. It's, you know, you feel kind of lousy for a few days, but you don't go to the hospital, you don't die, you don't infect all these other people. That's the goal. We may not ever be able to eliminate it, but if we get it back to the level of any other disease, where for most people it's just, you know, it's a no fun for a few days, but you're all right. That's victory as far as I'm concerned.
Should schools be reopened fully in September, or is it too early to make that determination, too early to make the call on that?
If the world in September looks like it does now, then yes, they should be reopened. Things have changed a lot. So, you know, if we see for some reason over the next few months some huge new surge in cases that sets us back, then I'd reconsider. But if it looks like it does now, I think the evidence is pretty clear. It's safe to reopen schools. Mm-hmm. And there has not been much instance of transmission in schools to begin with, because kids, although they can get it, don't seem to be as effective as spreading it as adults. But I understand, you know, people want to err on the side of caution. But by September, I certainly think, barring some change, that they should open fully.
Does the state budget contain enough money, even with all the federal stimulus aid, for Rockland County and specifically for your district, the 38th, for everything the 38th needs on both sides of the river? You've touched upon schools, infrastructure, small businesses, the environment, and more.
Yeah, I think it does. To be honest, I think this is an excellent budget that we passed. I don't love everything in it, but by and large, it does. When I ran, I said we want New York to be a place that works for everybody and not just for the wealthy and the well-connected. And I think that the budget delivers on that. It's a budget that says if you are earning over $1 million a year, we're going to ask you to pay a little bit more in taxes because you can afford it. And we're going to use that money to help out the middle class and the working families in our district. And so, in fact, the budget has over $400 million worth of property tax relief for families in New York State. People that are earning under $250,000 a year and paying at least 6% of their income to their property taxes are eligible for a new circuit breaker tax credit, which is estimated to help at least 1.3 million households around the state. And then we put over about $394 million in middle class income tax relief into the budget as well. And again, for people earning under $250,000 a year, which is obviously the vast majority of people in the 38th district, there are direct benefits, both on the income and the property tax side, along with the school funding, the education, the infrastructure funding. And on the environmental side, we approved a $3 billion bond act, which will go before voters next year for approval. And this is money that, if it's approved by voters in November 2022, can go for a whole bunch of things. It can go for flood mitigation. It can go for open space preservation, for renewable energy projects, for climate resiliency, for helping get our state onto a economically better future and an environmentally better future that recognizes we've got this challenge of climate change that we have to address.
Governor Cuomo's ongoing investigations into nursing homes, into alleged sexual harassment, potential misuse of state resources in a couple of different areas. Where does that investigation stand at this moment?
So the Assembly's Judiciary Committee is conducting an investigation right now, as I understand. I'm not in the Assembly and I'm not in the Judiciary Committee. And they're trying to play it a little bit close to the vest, I think, in order to avoid just having this become a circus. But I know the Attorney General is also conducting an investigation. I called on the governor to resign back in March. I joined the vast majority of my colleagues in the legislature in doing so. I think that although there are certainly things I appreciate he has done for the state over his time in office, the combination of the multiple allegations by women and subordinates of this abusive sexual harassment that he is accused of, the issue of simply not providing truthful information to the legislature and the public about the nursing home situation and about the pandemic response, I think there's a loss of trust. And when you lose trust, it makes it very hard to govern effectively. I continue to urge him to do the right thing for the people of the state and to move on. I think there is much that he can be proud of in his time as governor. You know, certainly he's helped set the state on a good fiscal path 10 years ago when he came in. I appreciate his push for marriage equality in New York. I appreciate his standing up against hydrofracking, which I think would have been incredibly damaging to our state's environment. So there are things I celebrate him for, but I think at this point it is time for him to move on. And we'll see, though, what the investigations uncover from the Attorney General and from the Assembly's Judiciary Committee.
Is there anything in the state budget that you think should be in there and is not right now? And might there be something or maybe a couple of things that, again, with a little extra push, maybe next year we'll see it become law?
There is. So specifically with pre-K funding, in the Senate's budget proposal, we put in there $500 million for pre-K funding because although New York City has universal pre-K now, the rest of the state doesn't. And so we ultimately got $100 million that expands pre-K programs and will benefit our district with over 400 new spots for pre-K in the 38th Senate District, which is great news. And particularly those spots, if I remember correctly, are in Clarkstown School District, Nanuet, Suffern, Nyack, and I believe South Orangetown. The reality is, though, we need a lot more. And so that is, I think, one of the major pushes that we'll need to do next year is to really try to get pre-K parity across the state. And so if New York City has funding for pre-K, so should we in the 38th District and the rest of New York.
38th District, State Senator Elijah Reichlin Melnick here on Rockland Talk Radio. We thank you for joining us here today. And we know you're about halfway through the first year of your first term in office. Best of luck and congratulations, by the way.
Thanks so much, John. It's great to be here with you today.
And it seems like already in just a few months in office, you've done a lot so far and a lot more still to come.
I appreciate that. And yes, we're working really hard. Got a great staff, two offices, one on either side of the river. And so if anybody out there needs help with state agencies, whether it's unemployment or Easy Pass or Medicaid or any of these state agencies, Department of Taxation and Finance, please reach out to our office. In Rockland, you can give us a call at 845-623-3627, 845-623-3627, and our office is at 20 South Main Street in New City.
State Senator Elijah Reichlin Melnick here on Rockland Talk Radio, produced by Shark Creative, made possible by Robeson Oil, the house that serves built Lipolis Electric. Don't be left in the dark. Get Lipolis, Hightower, Westchester. Managing your wealth through a fiduciary standard, Michael Labriola Landscape Design and Construction of Armonk by White Plains Hospital and by Tompkins Mayor Pack Bank. Remember to catch all of our Rockland, Westchester, Putnam, Dutchess, Orange, and Fairfield County talk radio programming on our YouTube channel, Shark Creative YouTube.
You're listening to Westchester Talk Radio,
powered by Shark Media, a division of Shark Creative,
and made possible by Entergy Indian Point Energy Center.
Visit SafeSecureVinyl.com.